pleasant good evening to all of you. It is good to be back here as well. You know, if I was preaching, I might be scared. Just preaching a lesson, I might be scared because there's too many preachers here to critique it. But seriously, it is good to be here with all of you. It's good to see some of them that are not as little as they used to be, a lot bigger than they used to be. Dana and I are glad to be here. Lord willing, we'll head back toward Texas tomorrow to the Dallas area. But I want to talk to you about the work. And y'all have been a very vital part of that work for a number of years. And so I think it's only fitting that you see the kind of things that you're involved in, the help that you are to us. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, the Apostle Paul talks about that you are God's fellow workers. And we're all working in this together. Some are going, some are doing other things. We trust that everybody's praying for it because, brethren, there are a lot of things happening, a lot of very good things and positive things. South America, to some extent Central America, you know, they've already had their 30 or 40 years of socialism. They've already figured out it doesn't work. They've already figured out they can't depend on the government. And so they're looking now to God. And in some places, in Venezuela in particular, it's just like people are almost frantically looking because they rejected the Catholic Church, what they were raised in, most of them, because they see it doesn't follow the Bible. They went to what, to them, if you're not Catholic, you're evangelical or Pentecostal, and they've gone there and they've seen, well, this is different, but they're not following the Bible either. And so more than once, about a year and a half when I was there, more than once, somebody says, all I want to find is a church that's just doing what the Bible says. And brethren, in that kind of an atmosphere, do you think we're going to do okay? Yes. And the churches there are growing. It's unbelievable. I'm not going to start there. I'm going to start a little farther south in Uruguay and Argentina. And if you know, y'all, I'm not sure, I don't think I showed these pictures here, but if I have, if you'll overlook them. This is the church that meets in Comodoro Rivadavia in Argentina. They started from the internet. Let me see if I can figure out. Yeah, there we go. That's the point right there. No, that wasn't it. Okay. I'll get it here in a minute. The brother that's in the back there, is the one who he and his friend were not satisfied with what the church they were in, and they went on the internet. And he found an article on, he was supposed to be preaching a sermon on Saved by Faith Only. And he found an article that was about faith. And so he started reading it, and after about a second page, he realized, this doesn't say we're saved by faith only. He closed it on the internet. I use that motion, but he closed it. But he couldn't forget it. And so he got his sermon done for the church he was in, but he couldn't forget it. So he went back to look at it. And he read, and he tells me, you know, it took me about 5 or 6 times to read the whole thing. Because I'd read a little bit, and I'd stop. And then I'd go back a day or two later and read more, and I'd stop. And when he realized it was the truth, then he, and I'm not sure whether he baptized his friend first or vice versa, and then one of them baptized his mother. And that was the beginning of this church, which is 26 hours by bus from the nearest church. Just think about that for a moment. And they have continued. This is the church there. They continue to grow. It's a petroleum center, so they have people coming from other places. The guy in the blue here on the bottom is actually from Bolivia. So they're there. This is one of the churches in Argentina. David Rodriguez on this side, who preaches there and a couple of other places. This is the church in Pilar, in one of the Buenos Aires suburbs. This church, you have Christians in this picture who've been Christians since about 65, 66. Now, in other countries in South America, they're some of the oldest Christians that there are. The lady, not the one here in the yellow sweater, the one right behind her, she since passed away. But she age-wise, was the oldest Christian in Argentina. She put out, by typewriter and mimeograph machine, a little bulletin called the Helpmeet. And she had, I have still copies that she gave me of those. And I want to point out to you, you see the gentleman here in the yellow. There's a lady behind him, you don't even see her face. Sister Paula is about this big. She's early 60s. This picture is from about 2 years ago. And when I met her, she told me, I'm the baby of the church. She was the newest convert. Okay? She was the newest convert. About a year later, I come back, and one of her daughters is a Christian. The other daughter is attending, and that daughter has a friend that she's bringing. And Sister Paula, this is a very good, typical picture. She's always kind of in the background. And yet, obviously, she's talking to people. Here's a picture of a church in Uruguay. There's only one. The brother that does the preaching is taking the picture. And I tell people this is, you know, as I look through my pictures, I find that this is one of the most common things that I'm doing in pictures. I'm eating. We like to do that. Venezuela. This is the church in Barinas. And I know I've showed you pictures of them before. But the church there is now up over 120. And they continue to grow. Nino is working with different people throughout the city, as well as going to the Dominican Republic, which we'll notice in a moment. But this Sunday, there were about 130 there, some from another church. This is another church in Maracaibo, and they don't have their building yet, although the walls are up now. But this is where they meet in the daytime, in the shade. You know, it's hot there. This is one of the churches in Caracas, the capital, and they meet in a meeting room in a motel. And so they're somewhat limited as to what they can do. Now, the Sunday morning that in Barinas, many of these brethren who live about 15 miles away came to be with us. They meet in the afternoon. And so they were there with us, which kind of swelled the number. But at this point, Nino has his hands full. And this is the building site for the church, for this church over here. As I say, now they have walls. I don't have pictures of those. Come to the Caribbean, to the Dominican Republic. And this is one of our common places to have Bible studies. A sister lives in front, that house, and then the houses in the background, those are her daughters. And, you know, her grown daughters. And they all live there, so that's a very easy place. Brethren, this church is very young. The man here, Ariel, has been a Christian now 3 years. There's another several more that are in this group that, again, are have been Christians 2 and 3 years. And this is the group that this year is the first time that I have ever been able to answer all their questions in the time that we were with them. Facebook makes a big difference because at least once a month, one or the other of them, am I not told? What do you think about this? What about that? What about? And we had about 4 hours together. But they're growing in number. They're growing in maturity. They, like most of the churches, only meet on Sunday morning because power is not if it will go out, it's when it will go out. I have never preached a complete service here, and this is not where they meet. They have a building. But I've never preached a complete service in that building that the power has not gone out. I have a flashlight app for my cell phone now because, I mean, you just know that's what's going to happen. But they continue to grow, they continue to progress, and part of the reason is that they don't meet on Sunday night. And so this particular group, and it's a lot of family, one of them said one Sunday afternoon, why don't we just, you know, it's the Lord's Day, why don't we just take Sunday afternoon and we can study here? And that's what they do. as they study together for an hour or 2 hours every Sunday afternoon, besides Sunday morning, besides Wednesday and Friday. As I think I've told you before, in the Dominican Republic, it's once on Sunday and then twice during the week, Tuesday or Thursday, Wednesday or Friday. That's kind of their plan, if you will. This is a new church in an area called Pantoja. And this church began from a very sad occasion. Nino Estevez, who's from here, but it lives in Venezuela, his father was hit by a car. He was in a coma. He lingered probably about a month. And during that time, of course, Nino came, and these people began, the neighbors began to come, and as they were talking, it got to the point that from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to 7 or 8, they would study the Bible. And this church is the result of that. We were there in June with this group, and that was about a year and 3 or 4 months ago that they started. And I will have to say that they were disillusioned. They were very weak. But there's another brother that I'll show you in just a moment, his picture, who's going to begin, has already begun working with them. And that has made a big difference, and I think will continue to. The particular Sunday that we were there, this young man here on this immediate corner in the plaid shirt was the only one of the members that was there. His wife was sick. The one next to him, he was kind of weak. Some of the older ones were down, sick, and you know we've been hearing about the Ebola now. Well, in the Dominican Republic, it's something else. It's the chingun, whatever. It's one of those that, you know, it's about this long. It's another mosquito-borne illness, and when you get it, you're not going to die from it, but you're going to be sick for about a month. And so there were several that were down with that. The brother here, right here in the suit, and that's Brother Luis Matos. You know what the heat is like in the Dominican Republic. It's like it is in Dominica. He's always in a suit. Luis Matos is now working with them. And Luis is a very good man. He has support now, but he quit working as in construction almost 4 years ago because the church had grown to the point that he felt he needed to dedicate more time to it. And so he did. And brethren, he lived on $5 here, $7 there, $12 there. I'm giving you, you know, the American equivalent that brethren would give it. He ultimately built a little room onto the church building so that he could live there. He's single. He was single. So he rented his house for about $43 a month. And somebody would give him cassava, different things like that, along. And that's what he lived on for almost 3 years. Because he was that determined to do the work. And the church there at Valle Encantado has grown. They're about 70. There. And here is a picture of Nino, the younger one on this side. You know, he's my age, so he's young. Brother Santiago del Dia, the man, the first one in the Dominican Republic to take a stand for the complete truth. A man whose health is broken, and it's broken because of the work that he did. He preached in the area where he lived on Sunday morning, and then sometimes on Sunday night, not so much, but basically Monday and Saturday were the only nights he had off. And he would go across town Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, every night, here or there, an hour, maybe only 35, 40 minutes back because of not as much traffic. But a man who did a great deal of good work in the Dominican Republic. Now we're going to go to Nicaragua, and let's go back because I want you to see. Well, okay, there we go. That's what I want to start with. Guess the trigger got happy. If you were to look at this structure, you would think, well, this is somebody's carport. And part of the time it is. This particular day, it was the children's classroom. And there were over 50 children there. Now, there were close to 100 adults at the church building. They squeezed 64. And when I say squeezed, I mean squeezed. 64 of the older ladies inside. Everybody else was outside. And this is not that big a village. I've preached to over 200 people in Masachapa. And that's how interested they are. Larry may know. He's probably been there. Because it's incredible. Now, I want to show you the guy that we're going to look at in just a moment. This picture, it's just somebody's living room. And we're there meeting with some brethren. But unless you know the story, I don't think you really understand. There are some brethren who live on a ranch that from where they live in the ranch to the front gate is 4 hours by foot. If they come on donkey, on horse, it's only 2 hours. And they really, really wanted to meet with us. And so the local brethren there in Managua arranged that we would meet at this lady's house. She's not even a Christian. They studied there with her. She's never made a change. But they called her, and she said, sure, of course, my house is always open for the work of the Lord. So it was arranged that we would drive 3 hours to her house, and these brethren would come the 2 hours to the gate to then catch the bus, to come on the bus an hour and a half, knowing that at most we would have an hour and a half together. So they made a 3.5 or more hour trip to only make that same trip back to be together with us for an hour and a half. Brethren, that's dedication. That's serious. And they were there on that occasion. Now, Miguel Narvaez there is from Masachapa, but he preaches now in a village that's like 15 miles away. And before the preacher there, Juan Castillo, was going to El Salto, if he could get a ride on foot, on bicycle, he now has a motorcycle. But Miguel is going there. And they're up to about 20 to 25 in attendance. They have baptized 3 or 4 people this year. And they continue to grow. They are working on, they're almost done with the building. And then here is a building, and this is out in the middle of nowhere. Not in the middle of nowhere. It's out in the middle of pasture. And a non-Christian decided that it would be good if there was a church in his neighborhood. And he donated the land. He donated quite a bit of funds to build this thing. I'm sorry to say the guy obviously had never been there, been in that area. Because about 4 o'clock, guess who the sun hits right in the face? Yours truly, the preacher. Now, there are only 3 members here. It's the guy on the crutches here. This is his daughter who's not a Christian. I don't remember where the other one was. There are only 2 of them. But you see there are brethren here from Managua, which is this way. There are brethren from San Benito, which is this way, who have come not only to be there for the service at 4, but to do personal work, to go out and to make contacts. And that particular day, they made about 12 contacts, people to follow up. The churches there in Nicaragua are growing rapidly. And every year, their goal is to move farther and farther and farther south. They don't have but 1 or 2 cities left before they get to Costa Rica. And it's always an encouragement to be there. I don't have a picture because it's kind of a hard picture to really see. But there's a church of 300 people, 300 members in Lyon. And their building is just long and narrow. So, you know, if you get the building, you don't get the people because it's so long. But last year they asked me to preach specifically on elders, on the requirements of elders, the work of elders, and all of that. And at that time, they had four candidates, for lack of a better word, four men who believe they fulfill the requirements. And brethren, that's not my job to go and see whether they do or don't. That's the local church. But they asked me to preach on this subject, and I did. And I think it was good that because the local preacher told me, he's the one who told me there were four. But then he told me after we got through, because it was Friday, Saturday twice, and Sunday twice. He told me, he said, well, the two more mature have already come to me and said, you know, I'm there's still a few things I'm lacking here. And I'm not discouraged. But I realize there's some things I need to work on. And brethren, isn't that what you want? Men who want to fulfill the requirements. So that's what we have there. Now, this year, I went to El Salvador. And it has been a number of years since brethren have gone there. Once a month, on Saturday, they have a study for anybody from throughout the country. And it's not a big country. So they come, and for Saturday morning, the guy here, right here, he and about 10 others came 2.5 hours to be with us on that occasion. And brethren, they were very happy. Chalchuapa, Awachapan, another place that we preached, and I'm still in contact with this brother and with his son who's behind me there. The guy between us, Juan Garcia, from San Marcos, Texas. Lord willing, in the end of August, he and I will be in Ecuador again. The group that came about 2.5 hours, this is where they meet. And you can see this is somebody's porch. And they wanted us to spend time with them. So we met in San Vicente in town for breakfast. They bought our breakfast. We went to the house. We had, Juan spoke there. Then we had lunch. Then I spoke, Juan spoke, or whichever way it was. We spoke again. When we left about 4 o'clock, there were people with tears in their eyes. And I know part of it is that they had not seen brethren from other places for a number of years, for 4 or more years. So it's very important to them. And this is another place we went. This is Platanari, where, again, there's no air conditioning. You meet outside in the shade. And this group continues to go on, continues to progress. The preacher is in a wheelchair, but that doesn't deter him. He goes on anyway. In Peru, this is two men being baptized, Mario and Bruno. They're teachers. One retired, one. And we studied with Bruno once, and he heard 2 sermons. We studied with Mario twice, and he heard the same 2 sermons. And the night after they heard the sermons, they were going back in the same taxi. And they told us the next day, the whole way, they're discussing, what should we do? The Bible's very clear, what do we need to do? So we get to Mario's house, which is where we're studying, on Wednesday. And we're leaving Wednesday night, like 10 o'clock. And so Mario says, okay, well, I have a question. Sure, what? Well, what do I need to do to confess? And I'm just like, wait, hey, you know, because I'm thinking what the Bible definition of confess is. He's thinking of the Catholic definition of confess. And Emilio Acevedo, who was with us, says, oh, no, we're not talking about that. You don't have to confess your sins to anybody. That's not what we're talking about. The Bible is you have to be willing to confess Jesus as the Christ. And that afternoon, they were both baptized. Now, you know, you wonder when someone has had as little teaching as that, and the brethren there are working, but they're new converts, maybe a year and a half old at that time. So you really think, well, will they remain faithful? And about a year later, I ask Emilio, he was there, and Emilio says, well, not only are Mario and Bruno faithful, but they have taught the principal of the school where Bruno teaches, and he's now a Christian. And he got me into the prison to preach there, to teach there. The people in the north of Peru are very hungry. This is a church in Piura, about an hour away, and you see they have a lot of chairs. And they're almost always filled because people are listening. They want to know. Now, here's some of the preachers in Lima, the capital. We flew into Lima about 5:30 in the morning. These brethren went and got us, took us to the house. We're having lunch here before we go out again on the bus to the north. And the brother right here, Emilio Acevedo, is the one who began the work in Sullana. He was there with them. He preached in their Pentecostal church Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night. And then the preacher came Monday morning to where he was staying. And they had a long discussion, about 4 hours. And, of course, you know, his first question is, well, what do you think about our service? And Emilio says, well, there's some problems with it. There's some things that aren't biblical. Oh, like what? And he told it. And Alex is his name. Alex says, almost crying, you know, all I ever wanted to do is just do what the Bible says. You've got to help us. And so the pattern was every night he preached. Wednesday night he preached about 3 hours. And then they had questions. Monday, Tuesday, they met. Wednesday, they met and studied. And Thursday morning before he left, 14 of them were baptized. Now, not all of them remain faithful, but you can see that there are a number of them that are. They meet in Alex's house in the front room, and that's where they are at this point. I've been to Colombia 2 times since I was here last, and brethren, again, very exciting. The work in Bogota, I work with 2 brothers in the flesh who are also working with this church in Vingon. And this is their new meeting place. It will seat about 120 chairs is what they have. They're going to need them. Because when I was there in January, they were right at 100. And they baptized 15 since then. Now you think, well, how can they do that? Obviously people are interested. But brethren, part of the secret is this right here. This is the men's class. They meet at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, but at 7 o'clock, the men meet. And they have a men's class for an hour, 15 minutes, hour and a half. The incentive for everybody to get there on time is that after they get through here, they go down a couple of blocks to the coffee shop and have coffee and bread. And the last 2 to get there have to buy everybody else's coffee and bread. So, that's a joke, and you know, and one of the younger men, the third one back on that side, he was one of the 2 that time. And he's been a Christian about a year and a half. But he goes to studies with him, the one in front of him, about 2.5 years. This one here, about 2 years. And they, you know, you see in the very back, that boy, I think it's 12. But they have him and another one about that age that are there. And they don't miss. And that is part of the reason that they're growing. David and Henry, his brother Ed, are the preachers. And obviously they're dedicating their full time to that. They, between the 2 of them, have anywhere from 15 to 20 studies a week. But they don't go by themselves.
Carlos goes with David to some of them. Leo goes to others. Andres, the one here in the middle, Andres is one of the few that was raised in the church. But Andres is now preaching 2 to 3 times a month. He should have finished his technical school about this time. But I'm hoping and trusting that he won't be doing that too long, because he needs to preach. They have a number of people that are helping them. Here is one of the churches in another area. Bogota is about 6 million people. So, I mean, it's huge. This area is called La Gran America. So big America, whatever exactly that means. And this couple here have gone now to an area even farther north to start another church. So the work there is growing. There are some places it could do better, but, you know, isn't that the case everywhere? And this year I went to the coast with David Perez. And, brethren, that was an eye-opener. I mean, that's just, we'll be nice about it. I have not seen a house with dirt floors in a while. I stayed in one several nights. And that's just, you know, that's the way it is. This church building is in Barranquilla, a very large city on the coast, and they're about 100 normally. They have started another congregation on the north side that's about 20, because they're running out of room. And they're very happy because this is their building. It's not finished, and they'll tell you, they're quick to tell you, no, it's not finished yet. We need to plaster, but brethren, this is theirs. And it doesn't matter, nobody can kick them out, nobody can raise the rent. This is their building. It's paid for. And most of that money is paid for by them. Here's a group out in a very small village, kind of on the edge of a lake/marsh. They live farming and fishing. And this church has been meeting about a year and a half. David had gone and preached there one night while I preached in another town not too far away. And all this transportation, by the way, is, you know, if you're lucky, it's in a taxi, but a lot of it's on motorcycle. And you're on the back. No, not my favorite way, mode of transportation. But David preached there that night, and I mean, they had no more than finished than I get a phone call. Brother Tall, the brethren here really want you to come, and they want to hear you preach. Can you come tomorrow morning? We were not going to leave till, you know, maybe noon or so. And I said, sure, brother. So I came. So this is that day, and they did not work that day, so that they could be there. And I preached. They have a place behind this for their building to be, but it's not there yet. They're working on it. And so you have in the coast, this is the brethren in La Hawa, and they have a number of people who work, brethren who work in construction. They have done this building themselves. And then you have to the other extreme, El Palmito. And you see the lady right here in the middle. She's early 60s. She was a Pentecostal preacher for 23 years. And this is her little they call it a rancho. It's just palm thatched, and then, you know, high roof so the air will go up. But this is where she preached for 23 years. And February the 27th of last year, no, January 27th of last year, she was baptized. She had found a tract somewhere. She called the preacher in Lorica, and he came out and studied with her and studied. And she had always read her Bible. And so she told me, she said, you know, it was like all of a sudden things began to make sense because I could put it all together. But you can imagine when they got to healing and spiritual gifts, there was a problem. And the preacher, Carlos, told me, he said, we left that afternoon, and I thought, well, you know, it was good while it lasted, but that's it. And the next morning, 7:30. Carlos, I need to talk to you. When can you come? Well, give me till, I think it's 9 o'clock, because it's about an hour and 15 minutes on motorcycle out to where she lives. I know. And he got out there, and she said, I have not slept all night. I have been thinking. I have been studying. I've looked at it again. And she said, you know, there's a couple of things I want to clarify, make sure I got it. And she was baptized, and she has never looked back. The church there is three people. Her daughter, who is next to her, and then her son, I think, must have been taking the picture. Carlos is the one on the far side. David says, the one next to him, says he's the biggest preacher in Colombia. No, not exactly. But now, this is El Garabalo again. This is the one where they're meeting under the thatch roof. And this was breakfast. They didn't invite me for this breakfast. I just want to clarify that. They didn't. And what you see, you know, you do see there is a plastic tablecloth under that. But the banana leaves, that's the place. The fish had been fried, tilapia whole. They were caught that morning. And then you have cassava and some of the other roots there. And that's the way you eat. You know, there wasn't a fork on the table. You just pick it up and kind of do that. Her husband came in after these brethren had eaten, and she said, oh, okay, just a minute. Took off a couple of banana leaves. Okay, there's your plate. And he ate. It's another world, brethren. And like I said, you know, it's kind of one of those things. We went 2 hours up the river to a village where probably a third of the people are Christians. And another 10 or 15% were Christians but have fallen away. And you know, brethren, I've never lived that way. We've heard about it, but there are people who left that village maybe once a month to go 2 hours down the road and 2 hours down the river. And they work, they rest, they bathe in the river. They, you know, it's a very leisurely lifestyle. It's what we needed at that particular moment because we had been running from day to night, or, you know, from morning to evening. But the opportunities are there in all of those countries. As I said, Lord willing, in the end of August, Juan Garcia and I will be in Ecuador again. And we're going to do the extremes. We're going to do 8,000 feet to the Amazon. I'm not sure what that's going to be. But that's the plan that we have. And all of these countries, there are now sound churches in all of them, with the exception of Bolivia and Paraguay. And the Guyanas, the three up at the top, next to Venezuela. And the brethren are working hard, and they're getting the results. Central America is the same thing. And in Nicaragua, the number of churches grows by 3 or 4 every year. In Honduras, this is from a year and a half ago. In the 5 years before that, the number of churches had doubled from 8 to 16. Because people are looking. And you hear about the violence in Honduras, brethren, it's real. It does not justify what's being done, but it is real. In one of the churches in San Pedro Sula, not in a very good neighborhood, we went there on a Sunday afternoon before it got dark. But last year, they came out of services, Bible study on, I think it was on Wednesday night. And as they came out, two different gangs started shooting at one another. And one of our 16-year-old sisters was shot and killed right there. And I was on Facebook not long after that. And her brother, who's I think at that time was about 19, we started chatting. And he said, well, you heard what happened. I said, yeah, and I'm so sorry. And he said, it's not her that I'm concerned about because I know where she is. She said, he said, but the guys, I grew up with them. I know who it was. I don't know which one actually the shot that hit her, but I know them. And he said, and I pray for them every night because I know if they continue this life, they're not going to live long and they're going to spend an eternity in hell. Now think about that for just a moment. And his mother, his father, because I mean this was one of, I think, three children, 16 years old. But who he's concerned about is the ones who killed him. Honduras, El Salvador, the Dominican Republic as well. There's so much to be done. And brethren, again, y'all are a part, a big part of that. And I thank you so much for that. I'm not going to say a lot about the Caribbean. I don't think I need to. I think y'all have enough people who know what the situation is in Dominica. Things go on. We were in St. Croix, and the church continues on. They're farther along on their block building. But they've got some, you know, they've got some money to put into it. In all of the islands, there is work to be done. What's being done in Dominica, I think, could be done and has been done in Barbados the last 3 years. And the results there are just as impressive. So I would ask you to continue to pray for those who are working. And brethren, I think you already know, I've tried to kind of pass that on to people who speak English, who only speak English. Let me say it that way. I speak a little English too. But because there's so much to be done in Spanish. And brethren, I'm going to close this part out right there because I think, again, you are very much a part of it. And without your financial support, but even more important than that, without your prayers, without your other support, moral support, I couldn't do it. I'm not getting any younger. And in Bogota, you know, it's climb this for about four blocks up, and then a little bit only is about half that steep. And that was at 5:30 in the morning. I got where, you know, it didn't take them long to figure out that I wasn't up for the 10 o'clock at night class that same day. I'm not as young as I used to be, but I'm thankful for your prayers and your support in all of it. And I want to close by just kind of reflecting the church in Masachapa. It is an inspiration in many ways. The first time I preached there, we're standing there outside this little building that they squished 64 into, and a bus pulls up. Well, that's not surprising. And people start getting out of this bus. And there's like 20, 25 of them. And they all come straight to the building. People start coming in bicycle taxis, which is fairly common there. There were one or two who came in taxi. I don't know why they were so rich, but they could do that. And then here comes a dump truck. Just a dump truck. And I'm looking as it approaches, it's obvious there are people in it. And there are people standing all across the front. The one that I'm really kind of seeing, you know how that goes, is a lady who is probably about this tall, about that big around. I would guess probably 60. You know, I'm guessing. And she is smiling the biggest smile. And this dump truck is full of people. And they pull up next to the building. And somebody gets out of the cab and begins to help them all out of the dump truck. Because where are they going? And these people have come from El Salto, 15 miles away, in a dump truck. Because they want to be there to hear the word of the Lord. Now, brethren, You know, I think sometimes we need to be embarrassed because of our attitude. In Allen, where we're living now, we're in the process of adding on to the back of our building. And we're going to be out of our building from after August 14th for 3 to 4 months. We're going to have to go 15 miles down the road. And you and I, you know, I don't have to tell you, there's some people that are kind of, you know, a little complaining because that's an extra 15 minutes for me. But brethren, we need to think about, why are these brethren doing it? Because they know that they need God. They have made a commitment to God. No matter what it takes, I'm going to serve God. And brethren, that's the commitment that we have to make. Someone has said it's not, you know, what determines how consistent you are in attendance is not how close you live to the building. It's how close you live to God. And I want you to think tonight, are you close to God? Or are you just kind of there? If you're not right with God, this is the time that you need to make yourself right. This is the chance that you have. And you're not promised tomorrow. You're promised only today. That's why the scripture says over and over, today is the day of salvation. We're here to encourage you.